Good.
Thank you very much, Theodore.
Only my mom is there.
Sole policy advisor, senior policy advisor with Alberta Agriculture. My previous work was as a soil specialist with various titles, and even previous to that, more practical experience, shall we say, in the field, privately and professionally. So I'm going to take you a bit through my journey, or some tips I've got of my experiences where I started from the soil and kind of go up from the ground up in all directions there. Hopefully give you some grand challenges. I'm not going to guarantee any great solutions. That's up to you people. Hopefully I can give you some tips you can use in your career and in your job. Just a sketch of where we're going. Going to go back into a little bit of history, not too far back. Just a couple of things there. Look at the question, are you T-shaped? So those of you now looking at your neighbor, I'm not talking about body shape here. This is something else. And then getting into trends and drivers that I see in my work, provincially, nationally, internationally, and what might be some opportunities for you in the private sector. Roy Simonson published a paper in 1991, quite a few years ago now, called Soil Science Goals for the Next 75 Years. So we're in that period. It's still valid, halfway through the next 75. One point he brought up, which I love, is soils are commonplace but not simple, and I'm always harping on people that soils are complex, and it's kind of a mantra that I come up with, and everybody says, oh yeah, Tom, well, you know, soils are complex. That's always preface my comments with that. He came up with four observations, recommendations, goals. He said the basic principles need to be established in soil scientists and education, and the underlying processes, a little less on the empiricism, folks. He said we need to develop the proper place of soil science in the science community and develop that effective cross-disciplinary links. Are we getting there? Maybe. And public image of soil science needs to be brought up and promoted. A few years later, Fran Rees is a private soils consultant, put a chapter in the soil science education book that the SSSA came out with in 94. His observations are the students are weak in science and communications. This is coming out. I'm not talking about going into school, coming out of school. He said they're lacking in training, especially in chemistry and physics, and neat and weak in that interdisciplinary science of all the ologies, toxicology, geology, etc. He said soil science is not traditionally involved in other areas that it should be, and soil science needs to change to meet the needs of environmental industry that he saw was growing in 94, and I would say it's still growing. John Havlin and a few others just a few years ago had a paper where they were looking at trends in soil science education and employment. And they said, this is surveys that they were finding, that soil science needs to grow beyond ag into environment. Haven't solved it yet, folks. It's still there. Come on, academics, where are you going? And 50% of employers are finding difficulty in finding qualified people. So if they can't find qualified soil scientists, are they going to wait for us to turn them out, or are they going to bypass us and go on to something else? It's a risk. They noted that him as co-authors, that there's a disconnect between the university's employers. How did that happen? How do we solve that? Who's going to speak first? So, collectively, I've just kind of summarized the four points here. We need an expansion of soil science. We need to get back to the basics of soil science and basic principles which lead us into processes. We need to look at that cross-discipline work, and we need to communicate out and educate. Soils are complex, right? I have to show something with a little bit of complexity here for you. Johann Bauma came up with a paper in 97. I see he was here at the conference running around asking some good questions. On a role of quantitative approaches in soil science when interacting with stakeholders. That's kind of an abbreviated version. These academics always have big titles on their papers. But he was great in promoting or pointing out the issues of scale and context here. So we go everything from left side here up from global scale at the top down to molecular scale at the bottom. We as soil scientists have to be functionally literate in all of those scales. Look at the graph beside, and we have intersecting vectors of empirical mechanistic understanding, qualitative, quantitative. And so he was, and then across all of these scales, so he's pointing out where this K2 vector is, that we can start looking at an issue at sort of large scale, a region, maybe a state or something like that. We use qualitative and mechanistic concepts to develop it. Drill down, we may end up over measuring something, getting into more quantitative measures and come back up to where we were in an iterative process. So as a soil scientist, you have to be able to function or at least aware of what's happening in this vector space. And he came up with what he called the term a T-shaped soil scientist. So easy enough for me to get my head around. My name is Tom, starts with T. The vertical part of this is that soil discipline. Do you have a depth of discipline? Now, they were constraining more within the realm of soil science. But if we say in soil science, my soil physicist training will allow me to get into depth in physics. Do I have that top of the T where I can talk to soil biologists or soil chemists or agronomists? And so on. So am I working in both of those? Did I come out of school trained that way? Probably not. I was probably more like the middle one. Very deep in my knowledge of understanding, I thought I had it all. It was fairly wide and probably had very little T development at the top. I've developed that top of the T in my profession over the many eons that I've been working. Do we have a risk now with all this environmental studies students coming out of school of creating the wide T's, maybe not the depth in there, or maybe it's something else? So what's the risk? Is there a risk, or do we have to have both now at the party? So do we have to have two people where maybe one was there before? Which do you want to grow? Do you want to start with the top, a wide top, and grow the depth, or the depth and grow the wide top? Which are you? Which are the employees that you're hiring? And what are you investing to get that balance of a T-shaped soil scientist? Other soils that we were all trained in school, in the upper left here, plots. Plots were everything. Research plots were there. This is the mecca of soils, Rothamsted. And even Sir Ronald Fisher was brought in there to minimize, to negate the variability of soils, the spatial variability. Classical statistics negated that, and so we could isolate on the factors under experimentation. It's amazing when I look at the academic literature of the information that comes out of these plots that then gets extrapolated into farm landscapes, into forest landscapes, and into whole countries. Those of you geography buffs will recognize northern Italy underneath there. So in the middle graph here, I'm looking at a typical North American farm field here. It's a couple of kilometers by a couple of kilometers. Looking at that landscape, how do we get that information from the plots even close to putting into that landscape without the help of a soil scientist that understands processes, scales, context? Never mind going on to the whole country area. A number of years ago when I was head of a soil section, I said to the guys, I said, we're not going to go into plots, we're going to think in landscapes. And this graphic on the lower left is what we used as sort of our identity graphic. I point out to people that the plots, the some knowledge, or let's say 90% of the knowledge that we have out there in the soil science industry is all about where that one plant is. Because soil experiment stations, universities, that sort of thing, don't put themselves up on an eroded soil. They don't put themselves on a saline seep or anything like that. It's always in a nice, deep, rich, low topography soil. And so we know, have a whole lot of decimal places behind that one point in the landscape, and we don't know anything about the rest of that landscape, or we're inferring to that. We're getting better in more recent years, but there's still a paucity of data in that area. The lower, or the graphic in behind here is Tom Hengel's work with the soil grids. They've developed a digital soil map of the world at 1 kilometer grids of soil values. Recently, I was communicated with them. Sent me this stuff of yet to be published, fresh off the press, digital map of Africa they've developed. They can regenerate this in like a month. And the zoomed in area here is the border between Kenya and Tanzania. Lower one at 1 kilometer grid, the next one at 250 meter grid. Soil carbon. They're predicting about 20 variable soil properties at a 250 meter grid for the whole continent. So the power of machines, of technology, is taking soil science into this landscapes, into context beyond my mental capacity. But there's a lot of potential here. This stuff is freely available, public domain. What can the industry now do with that, take that and merge it into other industries? Montage of some of the collection of things I've done or been to. Again, look at this. How much of plots do you see there? Nothing. It's all landscapes. We have to deal with small farmers with, you know, jab planters versus the larger farmers and precision agriculture systems, automated systems. It's all dealing with understanding of soils and landscapes and potentials and risks and things like that. If I'm dealing with pipelines, great exercise in understanding landscapes and risks in landscapes and soil formation, et cetera, doesn't matter whether we're working in a boreal forest or a tropical forest. Issues are there, sometimes just orders of magnitude difference. Same thing with mine reclamation. It's interesting, the talk Laura had in terms of moving soil, I moved 500,000 cubic yards in 2 weeks. But with a whole lot of machinery and help. So, I mean, it's huge, the magnitude sometimes that we have to deal with projects. Understanding landscapes and what does that mean in terms of monitoring what's happening, experimentation, determining things. So where do these sampling dots go on maps? Getting literature out there, it doesn't always have to be in the peer-reviewed published literature. We're seeing, I think we're in the middle of a paradigm shift in how we communicate, how we get information around out there, blogs, op-eds, all this sort of stuff that's there. The users, the consumers, whether they're individuals or corporations, don't go to the peer-reviewed literature. Geoderma is not on the favorite reading list. So where are they going? What's your role in providing that information to them? And then also look at soils as a community, whether, you know, in this case, I was in the far west of China, and soils and what soils mean to that society, to markets, to potential, to sustainability, all of that stuff comes into play. More recently now, we're moving in new directions, looking at this holistic concept of soils and society. You know, the right graphic here is Henry Jansen, Paul Fixon, a host of others, published books looking at global prospects rooted in soil science. And so they recognize that there's all these sort of pillars of issues, food, water, etc. And soils are the foundation or the relationship of all of that, and we have to manage soils to provide the needs of society in an ecosystem sort of framework. More recently, Johan Bauman and Alex McBratney done some work. They've done a workshop in Australia a few years back, looking at issues of soil. They're looking at it in a sort of a soil security-centric point of view. And notice it's always risk side on this left side. So either something has to be in shortage of supply or under risk for maybe public to take attention or pay attention to it. So they've taken the soil security as a centroid, or what they call the key stone piece to the puzzle of these sustainable systems. So again, both good papers to look at to try and understand ways that we might better communicate soils to the public and to the industry. So let's skip out now and head off into the private sector here a little bit. And so I'm kind of moving out of the government. I should have pointed out in the previous slides of McBratney and Bauma and Jansen and all those are sort of looking at the government paradigms. That's what governments are doing, what international policy and trade and things like that are doing. Let's look at the private sector here, and we're venturing into that with World Economic Forum, which meets every year in Davos, Switzerland, and come up with things. In 2011, they came up with three critical issues that were global risks, and one was the water, energy, food nexus. Energy is sort of interswitched with climate change here. So promoted that to the world, developed some neat graphics around it, and promoted that and said, this is the global society viewpoint. Industry were watching on that. My being in large oil company presentations where they refer back to this. So again, industry are looking at this and talking this language. The soil scientists start speaking the same language or be multilingual. Doesn't get better, but it does get better. This year, United Nations Environment Program, the yearbook, came up listing 10 issues before the globe, before the world. Two are specific to soils, excess nitrogen in the environment, agriculture, and you guys know all the other sources of nitrogen in the environment. The nitrogen cycle is number one issue in the world. Number nine issue is securing soil carbon benefits. The carbon cycle is there too. So we got both carbon nitrogen cycle. Can it get better? Number six I thought was interesting. All of the 10, or 9 of the 10 are risks. Number six is a potential, realizing the potential of citizen science, and I submit that we are in a paradigm shift where citizens are now acquiring, analyzing data, not only the academics. There's somebody else in the room with you now. And you academics either learn to work with this, take advantage of it, or label that the big bypass. And United Nations Environment Program is saying that, and they're saying that specific to educational institutions. They have to learn how to work with this. Think of like the winter bird counts. Digital data coming off your vehicles, vehicle recorders, all that sort of stuff is digital now. Snapchats, Twitter that are used by consultants. I find a bug or something, I take a picture of it and send it somewhere. Cell phone transactions. All of that. We're in that era now already, people. Doesn't get any better, but it does get better. They've just produced Assessing Global Land Use report, which talks about the issue of there ain't enough land for the food projections that we need, and what should we do about that? So that's there. They've also notified they're going to come out with another global report yet this year on soil potentials, land potentials, and next year on soil health, soil quality. Doesn't get better for soil science. We're in nirvana here, folks. Take advantage of it. Doesn't get better, or does it? Let's switch over completely into the private sector. KPMG released a report in 2012 listing 10 drivers. I count at least five of those that have soil science pillars in them, or basis in it. And this is totally the corporate sector. Looking at the corporate sector, these are building business value in a changing world. Soil science is underpinning to it. It's there. Take it, communicate it, use it. Remember KPMG, and this is 2012, and remember what World Economic Forum was using in terms of a nexus. That lexicon or language is coming into their report. They have what they call a footprint nexus. So they've taken those 10 risks and put them together in a nexus and looked at the relationships to them all. Systems thinking, systems approach. Are students getting educated in systems thinking from a soils point of view? Footprints, that's the other trend that's in there now that's in the corporate sector. I don't see much of it in academia. I don't see much of it here at the conferences. It is a term that's being used heavily now. And I've listed footprints there, and I could be listing more, and we get into life cycle analysis and things like that. So again, terminology, there's soil science throughout all of these terms. Still gets better. The finance industry, HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, one of the world's largest. Again, same time, 2012, came out with 9 drivers for the future economy. Soils is through here. Look at the little barcoded fish at the top saying, in the future, food chain and supply chain will merge. So we are looking at this value chain, sustainability, whatever you want to call it, all throughout there. I didn't like the fish, so I picked the cow in there too. I think it's been photoshopped, but the legs look the proper proportion, the ears look the proper proportion, but there's something else I can't quite put my finger on. You'll see some of these others. You'll see the banana peels as windmills. In the future, there will be no difference between waste and energy. Again, soils, commerce comes into play here, folks, and a couple of others, and I'm not going to take the time to look at it. You can Google it in the future, HSBC, and you can get actually some neat graphics that you can use for your presentations. back into the policy, into the government side, and the policy, Mark, I'm supposed to, you know, have a little bit here, so bear with me. There's a group in Canada and the federal government that somehow have got themselves sort of at arm's length out of the influence of government bureaucracy. Kudos to them. They identified five policy levers of the future. One is this attraction, which is like retail, location. So what can governments do to attract business and commerce to governments in a global sense? Immigration of labor and all that sort of thing coming in. What I found interesting was the direct communication, the bypass, they call it. How many of you have gotten direct emails from a VP of a corporation or a president or something? You don't have to go up through a line of chain of command like we did in the 60s or 70s with memos and things like that. So we have this direct communication venues now. We can get direct communications by Twitter, by email, all that sort of thing that we didn't have before. So how is that changing business? Public servants without borders. Citizen consumers. Remember the UNEP issue on consumers and consumer data. Now we have citizen consumers impacting governments directly. We don't have to go out and do consultations. We've got all these different ways of doing it now. The value chains, the integrated chain that we have, or what they call the invisible hand 2.0, and behavior by numbers. We're in this huge data explosion now. Are you ready to deal with it? We have artificial intelligence out there, open data, used for LCA, things like that. LCA, you're looking at land and land management, land use changes, all those sort of things. Land quality. Some other ones, social actors adapting to change. As individual citizens, we're in a click and go type of motif. I've got an app for that. Here's a Snapchat. My kids are completely useless unless they've got something that's clicking on their fingers. So, but that's society. That's this generation that's growing up and doing that now that are the leaders tomorrow, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Civil society organizations, social enterprise. We're seeing an emergence of social enterprises, a niche that didn't exist a couple decades ago that is in place now. Businesses are developing CSR, corporate social responsibility. Again, wasn't there in a big way few decades ago, it is very prominent now. Governments, in terms of the reaching out, governments are starting to say regulation doesn't cut it anymore, and we're seeing more innovation incentives in government policy and government programs than in the past, which was all just regulation, one tool in the toolbox. So this is happening as well. So in summary, just the drivers and opportunities here, we're seeing consolidations of companies into larger and larger. We're seeing business-to-business relationships. I know one large retailer that you all use today probably, and they developed a whole corporate social responsibility, social license by business-to-business alliances with about, I think it's 15 different companies that provide that biophysical land-based information to that company. So we're seeing a lot of this happening. Big data, open data, mining of data. Do we even know how to do that? Artificial intelligence. The environment is big time on everything. Millennium Development Goals, footprints, all that is there. Soils is omnipresent in all of that. Climate change, I didn't even mention that, but those meetings are going to be happening every year. It's in place. Look at the September meeting in New York and the agriculture sector unveiled climate smart agriculture concepts there. Soils plays a major role in that. Integration, soil science, cross-discipline, systems thinking, we all have to do that. Scales, human scales, science scales, and what I'm a little worried about sometimes is machine impacts. Machines are what I call scale blind. You can zoom in on Google Earth, you can zoom back. The information doesn't change, it's just the size of the polygons change, and machines need to be dealt with cautiously in that area. And again, use our soils knowledge to interpret, to develop new information at different scales. Traceability is also big. I won't spend time and reviewing the first few guys, but have we progressed on all of this? Is there still movement yet to be made? I would say yes. we're down the road, but the horizon has moved back on us, so we've got to chase that horizon in all directions, even more so now. Bit of summary things to keep in mind here. Think in terms of the whole landscape, you, and think of where your data is coming from. Is it just coming from where that one little plant is in that part of the landscape? And it's up to you to think in terms of landscapes, think in terms of scales, think in terms of context of that landscape that you're working on. I've had some interesting conversations in cross-disciplinary work with biologists. Biologists have a different, or ecologists, a different concept of landscape than what we do. Social scientists have a different concept of landscapes. We've had to kind of come together and understand each other's concepts before we can progress. So analyze yourself. What sort of a T-shaped soil scientist are you, or do you want to be, or do you want to hire? And look at the opportunities that are before us. Test questions for you. What is December 5th of this year, folks? The World Soils Day. And what is next year, 2015, is the International Year of the Soils. Not going to happen again for a long time. Are you there to take advantage of it? Are you there to leverage that in how you deal with your clients and developing new business? It's an opportunity. So I guess I'll leave you with a quote from a man that's much, much wiser than me, and he even took it from his father, in terms of dealing with the companies and dealing with society, and be smart about it. It's not necessarily louder voice, it's improve your arguments in getting the case out there. So with that, back to you, Ted.
Thank you very much, Tom. We have time for a few questions. Anybody have any questions?
How about for the previous speaker?
And for the previous speaker.
I've got several, if I may. Well, we can only do it though. Well, okay.
Do we have time at the end?
I'm sorry?
Do we have time at the end?
Well, we will have a break after Emily's presentation, which time we will have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. You lay down soils of different textures. Between each layer, you create an interface. That interface becomes a barrier to water movement. How do you mitigate that?
We scarify between each layer.
You still have an interface.
Well, but the gradation of the soil is similar. So the middle soil is the middle soil is simply the sand layer mixed in with naturally occurring loam. The next layer is that middle layer mixed in with organics.
Okay. But my point is, when you've got fine soil underneath the coarse soil, there's an interface. The soil in the fine soil has to be saturated before the water moves into the coarse.
That's coming from the fine end, of course, you're right.
Yes.
And
go ahead,
and
sure.
Having worked with Laura on half the soils that she demonstrated, actually, what we do in laying down that soil is we put down that bottom soil, and we put down about 2 or 3 inches of the soil above it, and we mix them together.
Right. That's what I meant by scarify.
Okay.
Mix it together.
Diffusion boundary.
So, you got one more question, then we're going to have to move on.
We've got more if no one else has one, but
does anybody else have any other questions at the moment?
You talked about harvesting that tree and making some kind of biological treatment. I'm wondering what the biological treatment is and what was done to prove the efficacy of that treatment.
Well, that's a big question. That was done by an agronomist who has, over the years, developed compost teas. So he selects the type of compost that he's going to use. First of all, he takes samples from the tree at the nursery to see what that soil is dealing with and what the composition, what the biological profile is, etc. Then he picks composts that are matched to that or that contain biological treatments, microscopic biology that will be injected into those tree root balls.
I ask because I've evaluated a lot of problems after planting, and I've seen a lot of things where people do something because they've got some theory, but they've never done anything to prove the efficacy.
This person is doing a lot of work, working with Rodale quite a bit on doing, oh, you're scrunched your face there. Well, we can talk about that.
Yes, we need to talk.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay.